You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. And a very good Wednesday morning to you. Mike McNamara in for a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Hope you're having a good morning so far, wherever you are. And thanks for listening to us. We have an interesting show today. And so it ought to be a good time. I hate to use words like legend on people, but one of the Marine Corps legends going to join us. Medal of Honor winner, retired Marine Colonel Barney Barnum, and he's an artillery officer by trade. Got out of the Marine Corps as a colonel, and then worked in the DOD. Ultimately, rising to a pretty high position there. And so we'll talk to him about working in the Department of the Navy after a long career in the Marine Corps, 27 years. And served as a Deputy Assistant Secretary for the Navy for Reserve Affairs, and did that for about another 7 years. So an interesting guy with a long career of service. So, again, won the Medal of Honor in Vietnam, one was awarded the Medal of Honor for actions against the enemy in Vietnam. So we'll talk to him. And his given name, Harvey, his nickname, Barney. So anyway, you'll hear from him this morning in an interview that I've been looking forward to for a while, and want to thank Bob Nielsen for facilitating the interview. So we'll talk to him this morning. So a special day when you can interview a Medal of Honor winner. And then just as important, Wounded Warrior Trials are coming up, and so you're going to meet a lady by the name of Terry Rifkin. She's the president of the Dana Point 5th Marine Regiment Support Group, and who have partnered with the 5th Marines here for a long time, and have been instrumental in the different monuments that have gone in the Memorial Garden at the 5th Marine Regiment at Camp Pendleton. Now they're interested in supporting the Wounded Warrior Trials, so they could use your help. So you'll hear from Terry Rifkin, and she, an interesting woman. No really connection to the Marine Corps growing up, other than until she got to Dana Point, and is a professional in the mental health field. And so, as a member of the Dana Point Rotary, she got exposed to the Marine Corps and the 5th Marine Regiment specifically because it's within proximity to San Clemente Dana Point area, and got involved then. So you'll hear from her, and then you'll hear from the gunner as well. And so all that packed into one exciting cavalcade of entertainment this morning here on the All Warrior Radio Network. And there's a lot of news to talk about, as always. I'll tell you what, I don't know of an issue that was set to have a greater impact on the nation as a whole, and than the upcoming decision about immigration enforcement. There is tremendous anxiety across the nation over what the president, what John Kelly will announce here upcoming. And so it begins the debate of the resolution of the fate of over 10 million people in this country. So whatever steps that they announce here will be interesting, because that's a lot of people in this country. And most of them are working here in the United States and are law-abiding citizens. And so it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. It's almost like you can feel the tension sometimes in the air this issue comes up. Anyway, having said all that, we'll usher in the day with the United States Marine Corps Band. Good morning to you. Exactly what they're going to find, by the way. Imagine their surprise. Pretty funny lyric, though, you have to admit. We have a great song, right? I mean, it is. It's a great song. Even has a little humor stitched into it. A little moralizing to keep our honor clean, even then. So it's an interesting song. We'll check the weather on the Marine Corps. Currently cloudy and 49 in Quantico. Cloudy and 69 at Camp Lejeune in Texas. Mostly cloudy, Granbury, Texas, 52. Up in North Dakota, at the northern end of the Central Plain, got a mix of rain and snow and 33 degrees. 29 Palms, sunny and 46. Camp Pendleton, cloudy and 50. In Hawaii, Camp Smith, dark, cloudy, 71 degrees. Okinawa's got rain and 70, so it warmed up a bit. And it started to rain. At the home in Fallujah, at the home. In Fallujah, it is 60 degrees. Clear. And at the home of Ballroom Radio, the Costa Mesa, Newport Beach area of Southern California, mostly cloudy and 53 degrees today. So, got that going for us. We're going to take a quick break. This hour, Mac Talk, brought to you, this hour of All Marine Radio. Mac Talk, where did that come from? This hour of All Marine Radio, brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug. The Battle Mug starts out, mine's sitting right here, as a 10.5-pound block of T6 billet aluminum, milled, machined, and anodized, and it's ready for you. Everyone is serialized. You can get it engraved. Its carrying handle is the carrying handle of the M16 or the M4, whichever you worked with. Picatinny rails on the side of the mug, so you can mount scopes, you can mount binoculars, you can mount lasers, you can mount cameras. Anything you can mount to a weapon, you can mount to this, as well as you can decorate it with emblems and flags and all kinds of other stuff. So it's a very cool gift. Great for any kind of commemorative event, farewell, promotion, retirement, and other special occasions. You can check the whole line of products out, not just the mug, but the whole line of products, which are very cool, at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company, Marine-originated, and made entirely in the United States. So check it out. We're going to take a quick break. Barney Barnum joins us next here on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good. The past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
This is Montel Williams. As a U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran, I know the sacrifice that our servicemen and women make for us every single day. If you're a veteran or a military member transitioning out of the service, help is available to you. The U.S. Department of Labor can help you get training, find a good job, or further your education. Contact the Veterans Employment and Training Service at 866-487-2365 or visit dol.gov/vets.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. 717 here on a Wednesday. And joining me is a man who got up too early, I think. But Barney Barnum joins us right now. And a privilege to have you on the program, sir. Thanks for doing this.
Well, good to be with you, Mike.
All right.
He's Brother Marines.
All right. Well, we need to learn about you for those people who don't know a lot about you. Born and raised where?
In Cheshire, Connecticut. Small farming town back then. Now it's a bedroom town near Waterbury, New Haven, Connecticut.
How does the Marine Corps get on your radar?
My senior year of high school, it's quite a story. They have a career day, and all the recruiters from the various services were in. Well, the Air Force got up and talked, and there was catcalls and whistles from the students and the Navy and the Army. This old Marine gunny got up and slapped his fist and said, "There's no one in this room. I want my Marine Corps. You're undisciplined. You're unmotivated." Then he chewed out the faculty in the back of the room for letting the boys get out of hand, picked his stuff up, and walked off the stage. Well, needless to say, I said, there's a guy that knows who he is, what he's got to do, and, I think I'd like to be like him. I signed up.
Sir, I'll tell you what, I hear the funniest stories. That's a funny question when you ask guys, well, how did the Marine Corps get on your radar? I'm a kid who's now doing good stuff at Amazon in terms of military recruiting and things like that, was a FAR team leader in Fallujah. He said, the guy, I looked at the recruiter, we went over to the Air Force with a buddy of mine, then I went to the Marine Corps guy, and he looked at me and he said, "Come back in a year, you're not ready for us." And he said, I was sold. So the funny story. So there's nobody, you're born in 1940, you're kind of a World War II kid. You grew up in, really with that kind of history, and everybody a veteran at that time, just about. But nobody steered you toward the Marine Corps in your family or anything like that?
As I grew up as a kid, I remember going to Memorial Day parades, and all the World War II vets from my hometown marched in it. So that was it was on my radar then. I had a cousin who served in the Marine Corps in the occupation of Japan. And then my dad was in poultry production during the war and had a deferment. And then when they were drafting everybody, he joined the Marine Corps.
Uh-huh.
And 2 weeks before he was to go to Paris Island for training, they passed the age law. So my dad didn't have to go, which was good for me because those who went through Paris Island with my father landed on Iwo Jima.
No,
70 years ago last week was the landing on Iwo Jima.
Yeah, and
I would have probably grown up without a dad. So
right.
So I had, and then I had my uncle's brother was in the submarine force in World War II. And my mom's brother, the only thing I remember about him is when his sea bag came home and he didn't. So, I remember we had air raid drills in my neighborhood when Ray Anderson would blow his whistle and we'd have to pull down our shades so the lights wouldn't show. We weren't that far from the ocean and German submarines were off the coast. So World War II was in my mind. I remember rationing. And I just remember no television. We sat around listening to the radio, and we did it as a family. So World War II is not bright in my memory, but I think it's part of the substance that built the foundation upon which I built my life.
That whole culture, I can even tell you I was born in '57, and as a kid in the '60s, you guys were off in Vietnam. But everybody was a veteran. I mean, the guys who were 20 in 1920 in the '60s, they were in their 60s, Yep. And so they were, you know, relatively young men. That was World War One, and then you had World War Two guys, and then you had the Korean War guys, and then you had some guys who were everybody was a veteran when I was a kid, and I remember being, Veterans Day parade in Sacramento, California, man, there weren't too many guys standing on the sidewalk. And,
they're all veterans and proud of it.
All veterans and all proud of it. Talk to me about you're an athlete in high school, baseball, football player. Were you any good?
Yeah, I was a small school. I was the president of my freshman and senior year class. I played baseball and football were my sports.
What positions?
Freshman, sophomore year, I played basketball, but I'm not a basketball player. I'm only 5'8". But a small school, I made the squad.
You had to.
Baseball and football were my sports, and enjoyed it. Small town and very competitive, and graduated there in '58. Went on to St. Anselm College in Manchester, New Hampshire.
And so at that time, you weren't in the reserves, or you hadn't enlisted when you went to St. Anselm.
Yeah, I joined I joined what they call a platoon leaders class.
Okay. Okay.
That's an officer training program for schools that don't have ROTC programs. So I went between my freshman and sophomore year and between my junior and senior year of college, I went to Quantico, Virginia for 6 weeks of training, essentially officer boot camp type stuff.
Right.
Then upon graduation in June of 62, I was commissioned as second lieutenant and went off to Quantico again for 9 months of officer basic school.
I have a son that's teaching at the basic school right now. So,
Camp Barrett.
No, when I was teaching there, he kind of grew up there a little bit, and it's kind of funny to hear him talk about it. But so what'd you major in college?
Getting out, getting a degree. No, economics. Economics was my.
Really?
Degree.
See, that was my major. Most people don't know that's not the easiest major in the world. And by the time I figured that out, I was too far into it to get out.
I know what you mean.
That was me. You get to the basic school. Talk to me about MOS selection. What did you want to be? You wind up as an artillery officer. Is that what you wanted to be? Tell me about that.
You know, I don't recall. I remember putting down artillery because I had a high school friend that was a couple years ahead of me and was artillery. And I remember him saying, you know, you get in the artillery, you're exposed to everything. You're in guns, motor transport, supply, communications, and you get to ride rather than walk. The infantry walks. I do remember that little pitch one day. But, yeah, I joined the artillery. I was selected for artillery, and I'm glad I did. I've had a good career in it, and that's I think it's the way to go. I mean, we're the king of battle.
Exactly, and you have your own you have your own saint too.
Yep.
The talk to me about give me a couple people in that have affected you in a very deep way as a leader. So we all have careers and we cross paths with a lot of guys, and I'm not going to give you the general officer Mac if I tell you, if I only limited to two, it'd be a slight to too many people. But so you got to give me two that made a huge dent in your head relative to being a leader.
Well, I think a lot of people did, and I think General Lew Walt was probably one. He was the division commander in Vietnam, and he was the one who recommended me for the Medal of Honor. And then I went on to be his aide, and then and only because of him. Was I able to go back to Vietnam after receiving the Medal of Honor, go back for my second tour. And, you know, he's quite a leader. I mean, he had two Navy crosses, Peleliu, World War II was quite a guy. So I learned a lot from him. And I remember sitting down with both General Ray Davis and General Lew Wilson, both Medal of Honor recipients, and discussing things with them after I got decorated. Of what was expected of me, number one, as a Marine who had the Medal of Honor, but as a recipient of the Medal of Honor, things to do, things not to do, things to be aware of, where the minefields were, what people expect of you. So I'll never forget those talks. And it wasn't just me. There was four or five Marines who had received the Medal of Honor in Vietnam, and And we had a little come to Jesus meeting one night at one of our conventions. And they really, and there were a couple other. Joe Foss was there. He was, you know, former governor of North Dakota and started the AFL and ACE in Korea and Medal of Honor recipient. So those are the type guys who had been there, done it, and didn't want us to experience. They wanted to experience all the good things that they did, but beware of the bad. So it was quite an education. And, you know, recently I was with a couple other colonels that we were all captains at the time, and we reflect back at that and know what a big part role they played in our lives, and in essence we all made a vow, you know, we're gonna do what they told us to do, and we're not do what we're not supposed to do, and we don't want to embarrass them. So it you know, and then another one, of course, our 29th Commandant General Al Gray. He and I spent Christmas Day together in 1965 in Vietnam. I'm a first lieutenant. He's a major. And that was when I first met him, and then our careers have gone along, and I ended up being his military secretary my last tour in duty when he was the commandant. So, and then there are countless gunnery sergeants, countless first sergeants.
Sir, can I stop you? You've mentioned like some of, like, it's almost like the pantheon of heroes, guys like Ray Davis, you know, Medal of Honor, Navy Cross, Distinguished Service Medal with a Gold Star, Silver Star with a Gold Star, Legion of Merit with a Gold Star and a V, Bronze Star with a V. What was it like sitting and talking to those guys? Because those guys had gone through the gauntlet in both Korea and World War II.
I'll give you an example. My second tour, I was the battery commander of Echo Battery, 2nd Battalion, 12th Marine Support, and 2-9.
Right.
One of my fire bases was Fire Base Dick. That was when I first got there in 68. General Ray Davis, 2-star, was the division commander. Colonel Robert Barrell was the 9th Marines CO, went on to be commandant of our glorious corps. And Dick Stilwell, Lieutenant General Dick Stilwell from the Army, I can remember being in a tent one day when they were sitting there. They each had a stick, and they're drawing in the sand, and that's when they were talking about going after the enemy, going down through the Ashaw Valley, building fire bases, no more defensive positions. Let's go get the bastards, you know?
Right.
And I'm listening to these tacticians talk, and I'm saying, wow. I mean, things like that you never forget.
Right.
You know, now General Davis is very calm, even going, as General Barrow. I never heard either one of them raise their voices. They didn't have to. All they had to do is tell you something. And then if they just give you that look, by God, you didn't want to not do it. So, I mean, for a young captain to experience that, and then I went on to know these gentlemen, you know, personally, close.
Right.
General Davis, a very good friend of mine. I went to his funeral in Georgia, and knew the family. And of course, in the Medal of Honor Society, we become a family. I mean, we get to know everybody and their wives and their kids. And so there's no rank in the Medal of Honor Society, although we show due respect to those who are senior to us.
Sure.
But it's been quite a run. Yeah.
The a quick story. General Lynch I had on one day, General Jarvis Lynch.
Jarvis Lynch, know him well.
Great guy, great family. His brother Chuck has been on. His son Tim has been on, who's a buddy of mine. And he told a story where, and it's almost unbelievable. And I'll tell you what, I've got a great education about Vietnam and things, stories that I had never heard. Or he talked about and when General Lynch was the OPSO, and I can't remember which battalion he was the OPSO for, but they went into an LZ. And they took 160 casualties The LZ had been registered by the NVA, their artillery, that was, I want to say, across the border in Laos. And when they got about two companies in, they opened up with, you know, upwards of 300 rounds of artillery fire. And for the rest of the day, they were medevacing guys out of there. And he mentioned Colonel Barrow at the time, flying in and, late in the day. And he said, I could not believe that, you know, this guy, given everything that was going on, he dropped in. He said, I don't want to be a burden to you. Is there anything that I can do for you?
Yep.
And he got, as I said, he got emotional when he was talking about it. And he said, I think we have it, sir. He said, we need to deal with that artillery. And he said, he just looked at me. He said, we'll deal with that shortly. And he said, with that, he was gone. He said, the next day, General Davis, I want to say, flew in. And he was walking up, and he went down to meet him. And he said, hey, sir, I don't know if it's safe for you to be here. And he said, he put his arm around me. And he said, son, this is my Arab operation. I'll go wherever the hell I want to. he said, but they were these incredibly steady men who'd been tested by some of the most fierce combat the Marine Corps had ever seen. He said, and they communicated that with you by the way they dealt with you. And he said it was just an incredible leadership experience that these great American warfighters, the way they handled themselves under tremendous pressure.
Well, you know, leaders like them have to exhibit that because, you know, all eyes are on them when they're around.
Right.
And so it's a heavy burden. But those two gentlemen, I've got to tell you, and I mean gentlemen, they both were gentlemen, but professional, consummate professionals. And God help the bad guy that wanted to take them on because they were persistent and they knew what had to be done and how they were going to do it. And took every logical steps. And both those guys, I think one of their successes was, you know, everyone talks about operations and meeting with the enemy, but I'm going to tell you can't do it without logistics. And when we went down through that Ashaw Valley, it was a logistics nightmare because of the weather. And if it wasn't for the moxie and the professionalism of our division commander, General Ray Davis, and our regimental commander, Bob Barrow, we might not have been successful, but they made things happen. But because they understood logistics, they knew you had to look ahead and how you had to, you can't win with just a Marine out there going. The Marine's got to be supported. So,
right. Well, that's the old adage, right, sir?
I tell you, I got my PhD in warfare being around those two.
My guest this morning is retired Marine Colonel Barney Barnum. I got an email for you, sir. Hey, Mac, I'm loving this conversation, and I think the word pantheon of heroes, that phrase is very appropriate for the names that Colonel Barnum's talking about. Wow. Question, how did he get the name Barney? If his
my last name is Barnum.
Okay.
And I'm told that my dad's youngest sister's nickname was Barney. So I've been Barney my whole life, and I'll tell you a story. My real name is Harvey Curtis Barnum Jr., after my dad.
Right.
Well, I go check into Quantico, my first PLC program, and as those who have been through this program know that the first night it's all paperwork.
Right.
Well, I signed my ID card, Barney Barnum. The drill instructor on into this call, Barney Barnum, where are you? And I raised my hand. What is your full name? And I said, Harvey Curtis Barnum Jr. Why'd you put Barney Barnum on your, well, that's what everyone calls me. He says, and I'm not going to, can't say on the air what he called me. He says, you cost the government .000004 cents. I'm going to have to issue a new ID card. And I paid for that for the next 6 weeks.
Those
who've been there, no drill instructors. They can see that drill instructor doing that. I know.
It doesn't take much. It's,
no.
At that point, another question for you. As you joined the Fleet Marine Force, and tell me about that. I mean, the nation's at war. You're going to Vietnam. You're gonna follow in the footsteps of the guys who you looked up to as a kid. Give me your thoughts as you got ready to go to combat.
Back up. When I was at basic school, 1962, we were there when the Cuban Missile Crisis broke.
Yeah, that's right.
So we upped our training 24/7. I was supposed to graduate basic school in January of 63. We got out before Christmas of 62. I qualified on the referees on a Sunday. And, of course, then it all subsided. So that was my first introduction. I stood on the flying bridge there at the Bannon Hall when we had one TV and we watched Kennedy give that speech that night. We thought we were all going to war. So we didn't. So my first tour duty was in Okinawa, 1st Battalion, 12th Marines, artillery. This is long before Vietnam.
Right.
So while we were there, we mounted out three times to go to Vietnam to protect the airfield. I was 6 months in, 63, and in the 64. In 64, I was liaison, artillery liaison with the 9th Marines. And we mounted out twice from Katina Air Force Base to go to Vietnam. Protect the hills around the airfield. Okay, this is when things were just beginning to build.
Right.
We never landed. We turned around in air and it came back, but we landed at Kadena and we simulated that that was Da Nang and we secured Kadena, one end of Kadena Air Base. Another time we went down and they actually issued ammunition. We said, oh man, we're going in. We didn't. Another time I was down in Tabonas, the islands in off of Longapo, firing naval gunfire, and they were going to stop and pick us up there on the way. Well, we never went. So that's back when Vietnam was just kicking up. We had, you know, we had a few advisors in there and a few troops, but there was no major commitments.
And that, so, and that is what, what's their 63, 64 time frame?
Okay. And then I left in 64. Came back and I went to a Cherry Point, and there were 12 lieutenants from the 12th Marines came back there. They said it was the cross training. Well, it wasn't cross training. It was free an aviator to fly. We had all the SLJ jobs, and I was there for a year. And then I went to Marine Barracks Pearl Harbor, and while I was there is when I went to Vietnam the first time.
How do you get to Vietnam from Marine Barracks Pearl Harbor?
Well. You know, one day, one of the officers out at Lululele went to General Krulak, the Brute, with FMF PAC, and they said, you know, General, there's a war going on out there. And we're Marine Barracks, Security Forces Pacific, and we're saluting admirals and generals, guarding doors, protecting classified files. You know, it's pretty boring for the troops when there's a war going on. So he said, I got an idea. Why don't you send company grade officers and staff NCOs and their MOSs from security forces to Vietnam for a couple months, serving their MOSs, come back, talk to the troops, and keep the morale up. And General Krulak says, you know what, that's a pretty damn good idea. So the quota came out. The first quota came to Marine Barracks Pearl Harbor. That was the biggest barracks. And for an officer and a staff NCO. Of course, all the young lieutenants and captains want to go. Well, I'm the only bachelor in the barracks. The rest of them are all married. So I went to the CO, Colonel Imweber, who was a father of seven, by the way, and said, you know, Colonel, why don't you send me? I'm a bachelor. It's over the Christmas holidays. Let the married guys stay home with their families, and they'll get a chance to go. He says, you know, that's a pretty good idea. Of course, my buddies weren't very happy with me because I got to go and they didn't. So myself and First Sergeant Mattson, I went. He went to the infantry. I went to the artillery. I joined Echo 212, Echo Battery. And a week after I'm there, I'm with Hotel 29. We launch off an Operation Harvest Moon. Near the end of the operation, we're ambushed. Company commander gets killed. I took over the company, bought the company, brought it out, and the result was the award of the Medal of Honor. So, and then I stayed there for a couple more months with the artillery and went back to Marine Barracks Pearl Harbor and did what I was supposed to do, try to fire up the troops, tell them about the war, give them experiences and all of that. So that's how I got to go the first time.
Wow. You know, it's the most improbable journey, right? I mean, you must look back on that and say, you know, there's so many things that unless they happen. And I'll tell you what, I mean, the Marines of that company, a lot of them, I'm sure, think back on that night, and maybe it's somebody else that isn't as decisive as you are. Or
you know, first of all officers are trained as platoon commanders. First, someone says you're an artilleryman. How'd you know what to do? All officers are trained as platoon commanders first. Then you go off into your specialties, you know, aviation, supply, communications, whatever. So I'd only been out of basic school a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty fresh in my mind.
And at that point, sir, there's no IOC or any other postgraduate work, right? It's all the infantry guys. I mean, you had the same training as everybody else, as the infantry guys.
And you know, I got to tell you, when we were going to ambush, you know, that's the first time I ever been shot at. So I hit the deck. And when I looked up from underneath my helmet, all these young kids, Marines, are looking at me saying, okay, Lieutenant, what the hell are we going to do? They didn't even know my name. I've only been with them 5 days. They didn't even know my name, but I had a bar on my collar, and when lieutenants start to do things, you do it. So what I really had to do is just jumpstart these young whippersnappers and give them some direction. And I found real quick I didn't need a bullwhip. I needed to guide them because, you know, there's no fury unleashed. A bunch of Marines who have seen their buddies injured or killed and know that the company commander was killed.
Right.
So, I mean, I tell people who don't know, I went from being a lineman to being a quarterback that day and call the plays. And I knew what plays to call because I've been practicing, training as a Marine. So we came together as a team, and that's what the Marine Corps is all about, you know.
Hey, so let me, can I ask you?
Command and,
can I ask you some specifics about that? You know, the company commander's killed. You're the FO. You must have been in proximity to him. The radio operator's killed. Were you still able to communicate?
Yeah.
Tell me about that. Were they killed by indirect fire or direct fire?
Well, the company commander, we're coming out of the Quezon Mountains, and I'm probably 75 yards behind him. And he's forward, and he's walking out on a dike going across a rice paddy into the village of Kifu. They picked him out with a map in his hand, a .45 on his hip, and a whip antenna Savoy was carrying behind him, the PRC-25.
Right.
And the communist doctrine, you take out the leadership and everyone stands around. Because in communist doctrine, officers do all the commanding.
Right.
The sergeants and corporals don't do anything. So they figure if they took him out, then we would be leaderless, and they could engulf us and kill us all. Well, so the initial rounds hit Captain Gormley. I think it was either a B-40 rocket or some type of rocket. And mortally wounded him and killed Savoy, the radio operator. And they went down. And that's, as I said, then I'm on a PRC 8, 9, 10, calling my artillery, adjusting the artillery. And I realized that the company commander's out there, the radio's out there. So I went out and got the company commander, brought him back. Captain Gormley died in my arms. And then I went out and got the radio off of Savoy, came back, strapped it on, and called the battalion commander and told him I'm the forward observer. Company commander's dead. I've assumed command. And humma, 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 and, you know, briefed him in. So that's how that happened.
And
that's how we are in the Marine Corps. You know, the senior guy is down, the next guy steps up.
Roger. What did you do with your the radio you were using to coordinate the support?
My radio operator, Corporal Iconato from Chicago. God bless him, but he was with me. He never left my side. He continued to control the artillery when I got busy running the infantry company. So we had continued artillery support.
Roger.
Because I called him in.
Right.
And adjusted the fire and did it very superbly.
The
I was moving around, he was right with me.
I've got another email for you. Hey, Mac, I'm curious, what did they run into that day? Was it NVA? It was NVA, sir?
It was NVA, battalion, and they were well dug in, well camouflaged. They had uniforms, they had uniform patches. They were all in uniform and with insignias and very well disciplined, very well camouflaged. And I think it's the first NVA large unit of that size that anybody had been in contact in the Vietnam War. Yeah. But to this day, I don't know how it all happened, how they let three companies go by under rear element security, and then they triggered the whole ambush at one time. In other words, I heard some shooting up front, and then all of a sudden hell broke loose in the back. But when I got on the phone with that battalion commander, I realized that the whole 2nd Battalion, 7th Marines was under fire by the enemy that was well dug in and well entrenched. So, they were a tough unit, but they weren't a match for Marines. We overcame, my company overcame 10-1 odds.
You know, so that's incredible. Let me read you another email. Hey, Mac, first of all, I want to thank you for having Colonel Barnum on. Men like him, especially as he relates stories to these other incredible men that have built the Marine Corps into what it is today as a modern fighting force, are guys who we need to hear from more often. Just want to thank you for having this. Actually, thank Bob Nielsen. He's the one that set this up, and certainly appreciate Bob's effort in doing this. And also, so the email goes on. Mac, has Colonel Barnum had a chance to go over the incident with MAPS, and were they dug in, bunkered up? And if so, how did the Marines get to him that day once they triggered the ambush that it sounds like he was in the midst of? So bunkered and dug in, sir?
Well, this is 50 years ago.
Right.
After the battle, we consolidated that night, and then went down to Route 1, and the operation was over. They answered a question, and then I went back to the artillery. So I didn't stay with the infantry for any long-term analysis. I've read several articles in the Gazette that people have written. Colonel Leon Utter, who was the battalion commander, one of the greatest leaders ever of 2nd Battalion, 7th Marines, and Brigadier General Jonas Platt was a task force commander. Wow. Their analysis of it all. So we didn't go after them. They were coming after us. And through with the helicopter gunships that were turned over to me and that I had, and with the artillery, we knocked them down. They probed us all night and fired. And when we got up in the morning, the battlefield was cleared. They had DD-mowed. They had taken their dead and their wounded and gone. In other words, they broke contact. We didn't break contact.
You know, for those of you who don't know, Didi Maud is they got the hell out of there. Ask me how I know that. The guys who taught me at the basic school in 1984 were all veterans of the Vietnam conflict, and you learned what Didi Maud was very quickly when they taught you. I need to take a break. Can you hold with me? And then I want to talk about the aftermath of it. I want to talk about the society, the work you guys do, and kind of the rest of the story, if you will, as we continue. You don't mind, do you?
Mike, I've thoroughly enjoyed this, and the fact that I'm hearing from my brother Marines out there, I'm yours for as long as you want.
All right. My guest this morning is Colonel, retired Marine Colonel Barney Barnum, and we're talking about his Medal of Honor, and more importantly, I think to him, you're going to hear about the aftermath of it and what the Medal of Honor Saudi endeavors to do today and the important work they do. So more of that coming up next on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.